The tax increases, we've talked about this before, the tax increases are job killers. People are most concerned about keeping their job or getting a job and having some stability and certainty in Wisconsin. And it's really puzzling how, when we have a $5.9 billion deficit, and instead of getting our house in order, we're raising taxes, which will kill jobs, and it's counterproductive. And I don't know a lot of other states who are going that route. I think it is a bad public policy. If you look at the Commerce Department's agenda, it is extremely weak. I think it does not focus its resources on attracting and growing and retaining jobs. It's very, very weak. I think that's a disappointing message for our citizens who are very concerned about economy and jobs.
The Department of Commerce is a good example where we're going in the wrong direction. The whole provision with the prevailing wage. We are doing some research. I understand why, Democrats won the election and they are trying to pay back some of the union allies who put them in control. But at the same time, the provision goes so far. We are doing research right now, but in one municipality in my home county, 30% of the city is in a TIF district. Now, many of those are homeowners who bought a home in a development, didn't know it was in a TIF district, don't particularly care. But under this provision, they would be required when somebody puts a new roof on their house or when somebody puts windows in for home improvement to pay much higher rates for the same improvements that somebody who might happen to be across the street that wasn't in the TIF district would have to. So I think that's an example where their agenda is going so far askew from actually growing jobs that it's going to cost an awful lot of people not only higher payments to do something on their home or on their business, but it's going to mean fewer people are actually working to do it.
I have one developer in Milwaukee who works a lot with the city, major developer. He said he has $200 million plus of projects on the table that he doesn't think he's going to be able to go forward with because of this. He said it's going to be a killer of his projects. Also, he thinks it's going to be a killer for a lot of the minority groups who have gotten into construction and a lot of the projects and jobs that surround it. He thinks a lot of these companies that have grown up in the last decade are going to really be hurt, especially the Hispanic ones who are entrepreneurial, who are doing a lot of the things and are doing it in a way that's more cost effective. He thinks they'll be cut out of the business.
One thing I'm going to focus on today is the unionization, the forced unionization of home health care workers. My mom's 86. She lives in her own home, and that is something of great joy and pride to her, to force her to have to move into a nursing home by, in essence, doubling the cost of her home health care is not the direction that we need to be forcing our citizens who are already on a very limited budget. They're not getting the pay increases that will be forced by arbitration. And again, as we heard yesterday, they do not care about local economic conditions. The Secretary of Department Administration yesterday, when asked, should the local economy be part of consideration, said, no, that we don't think it should be. So, again, when you stress that kind of thing on senior citizens that don't have the ability, that are on a fixed income, it's basically going to force them out of their home into nursing homes.
We're seeing also, when we talk about our focus is really on jobs, when you look at the requirements that they are changing in W-2, the national model was done after Wisconsin passed its landmark provisions to make sure we give people every tool available so that they can go and get trained and have a family-supporting job. And we see in this budget that we are doing a number of things to roll that back. We're not going to keep the requirement in that parents should have their kids go to school. We're not going to keep the requirement in that there are some penalties if you don't participate in trying to find a job. We're saying that it's perfectly fine if you want to go ahead and do some of these provisions without very much, accountability at the end. And we're also seeing one of the most egregious is that people at home who are unemployed or who are in their job are happy they have one. And if they are lucky enough to have benefits where they're paid to take off to have a child, that's something we all support. But very few people, if anybody, get 26 weeks of paid leave to go and have a child. And I think that that's one of those provisions where everybody thinks it's a good idea. It's just whether or not Wisconsin can afford it for people who are actively seeking employment but not employed at this time.
is going to draw a big wedge between those hardworking Wisconsin families who are working and are trying to do their best to keep their families together. Those women are not getting the same benefit of being able to stay home. They have to go out, keep their jobs going. They have to get their put their kids in child care. It's just unfair to the average hardworking Wisconsin family who's going to be paying for those other mothers to stay home and not have to work.
One of the job killers that we're going to be talking about today is a fairly obscure provision dealing with the repeal of the tax commission. As we all know, last year, the Menasha Corporation successfully took on the Department of Revenue by using the Tax Appeal Commission and said, wait a second, we think that the Department of Revenue rules are wrong. So they stood up, they won. Well, what are these guys doing? They're just basically going to change a rule that basically says the Department of Revenue rules will be your first consideration. So why even have a Tax Appeals Commission when you're forcing them to use the Department of Revenue rules? And again, when you just had a corporation that's trying to create jobs successfully appeal something, what do? You change it so they can't successfully. Again, it kills jobs.
And the Madison math continues. When you look at the Medicaid budget, which is one of our biggest budget items, the governor really is skimming the money out of GPR, putting it other places, and then he's taking that money, using it someplace else. And we were talking about seniors in nursing homes. They're going to have their bed tax doubled, as Phil was mentioning. But you know what? They only need to raise it 25% to do the 2% increase in the providers. The rest of that money is going to be skimmed. So that kind of Madison math of raising fees, raising taxes, skimming that money and using it for other purposes is really going to hurt the average Wisconsin family. And the senior right now is being doubly hit with the bed tax in the nursing homes, and that tremendous increase. But also senior care is really a protected benefit for our seniors, and that too is going to be skimmed and put through other expenditures. We're spending too much. We're not putting our house in order by making the necessary cuts, as many other states are doing. They're like their families. They're sitting down. They're saying, "What can we cut? How can we be more innovative? How can we be more effective?" No, Wisconsin's going forward, taxing more, spending more, and growing government while our Wisconsin families are struggling. It's not right.
Right. And the last thing that we have concerns about is really the entire funding of Medicaid as a whole. You'll see in the budget that they are doing a pretty massive expansion of Medicaid benefits to childless adults. One of the questions that we have is whether or not their projections are anywhere near accurate, because based on past history, there's been a much steeper trajectory of people who are enrolling in the benefit. But they have in there an unspecified $100 million reduction. So let me get this straight. We're getting all kinds of money from Washington to make up for the GPR. We're adding more people into the system, and we're cutting $100 million. That seems to me that at the end of the day, 2 years from now, we're going to have one of two options. We either dramatically increase taxes to keep benefits the same, because we've got to make up for that federal money, or we dramatically cut services. So my question to the secretary is going to be, which of those two are you telling Wisconsinites they should expect?
And my last point, they are systematically trying to get this done as quickly and efficiently as possible. As we saw when they implemented the largest tax increase in Wisconsin history in less than 72 hours, it is the same thing today. If you heard yesterday, Chairman said, well, we're going to limit debate to an hour. Again, you're going to see today where you're going to see very strict limits on how much.
If only they would have done that.
I know. Yeah, and again, you know, but that's the question. You know, here we are, the middle of March, okay, and we've not had one debate yet. If you remember when the $1.2 billion tax increase was implemented, there was no debate. There were 50 amendments and no debate. There was great speeches afterward, but again, they want no debate on this. They want no light of day. When newsrooms are stressed to their limits, again, facing unprecedented economic conditions, they want to try to use that to their advantage. They want to make sure that none of this sees the light of day, and that's why they're trying to do it as quickly and as quietly as they can. And I think if you look back at something like the implementation of that 11 to 13% corporate income tax, after that was passed in the dark of night, Senator Hansen, 3 days later in the press conference, said, "Oh, well, I'll look into that. I'll see about that." Well, no, you've already passed it into law. Don't be telling people now's the time to look at it.
When people are real upset about the lack of transparencies, the lack of accountability, the lack of their elected public officials knowing what's really happening with AIG at the federal level, people are going, "What? You mean you didn't know these people who have ruined our financial industries? We're going to get these huge bonuses?" And they're going all pointing fingers, going, "No, we didn't know that." Well, we have to know what we're voting for. People have to know and demand that of there are elected officials. We have to know what we're voting on, and we have to know how it's going to affect our people.
Right. Well, we wanted to leave some time for questions for you if you have any, Bob.
So yesterday during the briefings, you guys were supposed to be getting more updated information to reconcile numbers. How often do you anticipate getting new reconciled numbers from Secretary Morgan or from DOA as we go through federal spending money?
I think in some ways it kind of relates back to what Phil just said. They are trying to rush things through as quickly as possible. And as I said yesterday, I give Chairman Pocan and Chairman Miller some kudos for giving us the opportunity to at least see the information. But do you think that Morgan memo would have ever surfaced if we hadn't asked the questions and had Fiscal Bureau give us the number showing almost $100 million deficit? And that's why I am confident that as long as we continue to shine light on the projects, we all voted for it, so it's not an issue of whether or not the spending was good, but we want to make sure that it's done in the light of day and we know about it. So I'm hopeful that there are many more updates as time goes on to make sure that the committee and the legislature is fully informed.
It's clear that the federal stimulus package is a process that's going to continue to be a challenge for us, but going back to my point, we have to know what we're doing. If our decision yesterday is going to make us cut priority projects tomorrow, it's not a good decision just to hurry up and spend or you won't have the money. That really concerns me. And I think the taxpayer, the citizens are going, "This is ridiculous. We're spending so much money." And a lot of these people don't even know what they're doing, and they're very upset about it.
Yeah. We Republicans on finance developed a plan to fix a budget that is historic in size. Is there a plan out there?
We'll have an opportunity to fix less than 0.5% of this. We're basically being shut out. During the $1.2 billion tax increase, not one of us were talked to in advance. When you're building something, that is a time that is an opportunity for us to participate. We're being completely shut out. So we're more than happy to work across the aisle as we've demonstrated. But when you're not being called in, what are we being asked? We're not being asked to participate. So,
but you're members of the budget committee. Don't you have an obligation to float an alternative to what the Democrats, starting with the governor, are proposing?
Well, first of all, you have to remember that the Democrats, especially in Governor Doyle's office, they have been working on this for months. The Democrats on this committee, from what we understand, have been meeting with the Doyle administration to craft the plan for months. The first opportunity that we got to actually begin to even review it, besides the propaganda and the executive budget, was the Fiscal Bureau summary we got last week. So will we be offering a contrast to show how we think Wisconsin should grow? Yes, we'll be offering some of those plans. But Phil is right. I mean, there is a realistic expectation that is it possible that the four of us can craft together a $63 billion alternative budget? I'm not going to say that it's impossible, but it's definitely we are at a disadvantage. So my preference would be to try to correct the mistakes that we have seen in their budget. You know, Russ Decker had one of the lines from the conference committee last time. What the governor proposes, 90% of it is going to continue forward because he has the ability to write the budget and craft it. I just want to work on fixing the most egregious parts that are going to hurt job growth in Wisconsin.
So are you going to have specific proposals to close some of the budget gaps, deficits? Are you going to be offering options?
You
will.
Yes. I mean,
in
and
the
some
area of healthcare, education, and taxation?
Yeah, some of those are going to be fairly simple. I mean, we're still waiting for some of the Fiscal Bureau memo, so I want to be honest with you that we've only had it for a week, so, you know, fixing a budget hole this size is not easy. But there are some simple things that we can do. We don't need to expand programs. We don't need to create new things, and we can't pay for the ones that we already afford. We can't afford. I think we need to look at some of the programs and decide if we're using one-time money for ongoing expenses, we should probably be making some of those cuts now, not waiting to do it next time or raise taxes and tell people that's the only choice we have because we made a mistake in spending the money before on ongoing programs. So
we're following the governor's lead. The governor said the new increase is staying even. That's going to be our motto, is, again, that we agree with the governor that, again, an increase in times like this is staying even. And so that's something. You know, the other thing that, you know, you have to look at is the fact that this governor, with his veto pen, has in essence shut out the legislature on numerous occasions, whether it's the $1.2 billion raids on transportation that he did alone with his veto pen. It wasn't the legislature. So even if we come to a bipartisan agreement that fixes a number of these problems, unless you have the governor on board, it's for naught.
But Steve, our guiding principles are this, and that's what are these, and these are what we've been talking about. Number one, we would not raise taxes in a time of recession. History tells us raising taxes produces a deeper recession, if not into a depression. So that's number one. Number two, we'd freeze all new spending and not do 1 ounce of it unless it is in the area to grow jobs and the economy. And two, it is to get back to transparencies and accountability and make sure the budget reflects what we are really doing, not taking money, GPR, from Medicaid and education, you know, $1.3 billion, shifting it to other spending, and then having a hole in the next budget, which they're not even showing, but we do. They're not answering the questions.
How would you control property taxes on the inner city?
Well, to control property taxes, number one, you've got to address the education spending, because he allows them to spend more but doesn't do the two-thirds funding. He reduces the commitment to that, so that's going to raise taxes. With the mental health transfer out of the county, that is going to raise taxes. With the prevailing wage issue, that is going to reduce projects in local municipalities, which is going to hurt their tax base. That's going to affect property tax.
And they're letting out up to 3,000 criminals.
Yes.
I mean, there's a number of provisions that are all going to be directly related to the property tax. And that's why, number one, we wouldn't get rid of the QEO.
No.
The QEO has shown over the past decade an ability to help school boards control property taxes, which is probably the number one issue most Wisconsinites are thinking about. So I think there's a number of ways that we can control property taxes. I wouldn't increase the revenue limit. I would say that a municipality should stick within the 2%, which they were able to do before. That's a workable number. Most families aren't seeing 2% increases, but we're guaranteeing government does. We've got our priorities mixed up. We need to watch out for families first and grow the economy and not focus so much on making sure that you know, every nickel can get to government and that we have to pay for it.
Would you guys have any opportunity to break out an individual agency budget, say DOJ, where the AG has challenged Joint Finance Committee to prove its commitment to public safety, and take that budget and say, look, this is what the governor's doing, this is what we propose, on an agency by agency?
Well, we have that option, but we basically, to solve this budget problem, we're going to have to reduce spending. So while the Attorney General has some very good initiatives, I think if we are going to take our approach, which is not to raise taxes, you're looking at $2 billion of programs that can't be funded. So I think while we want to support the Attorney General, it's very unrealistic we have the money at this time to do it. But I tell you, Steve, for public safety, the best initiative we could do is not let people out of prison earlier, especially the violent crime ones.
Spending going on here, patterns.
The question that you're going to ask of Secretary Timberlake, would you cut services, or is that what, I mean, what would
well,
you
you're creating a huge deficit. We see already there's a $500 million transfer out of Medicaid being funded by federal money instead of GPR. Are you assuming that the federal money will continue at that rate forever? Because we're not seeing that being promised by Washington. And if you're not, that means we only have two options, raise taxes or cut services. Which of the two are you telling people is going to happen, or are you guaranteeing that we're going to get more money from the federal government?
Well,
And that's really what it comes down to.
So you wouldn't do the program in the first place. That would be your answer to the question?
Well, my answer would be that, especially with the $100 million cut that they're showing, which we have no idea where it comes from, yeah. It seems to me that before we start to scare providers who are doing the very best to take care of people who need health care, we should not expand services until we guarantee that we have enough to pay for what's already on the books. And this budget does not show that.
They're going to shift the cost to the providers. That's going to raise our health care insurance. That's not fair. Healthcare costs are just tremendously important to our families. But this whole budgeting process of taking money from core programs like education, Medicaid, shifting out that money to spend, filling that hole with federal dollars today is going to leave us with a huge problem, because basically all this is doing is increasing the spending, which is our basic problem in Wisconsin.
And one thing that we are waiting for a memo from Director Lang, but when they talk about the lowest structural deficit, we don't have the paper to prove it yet, but I'm hoping to get it soon, what they're doing is they're artificially increasing the base, assuming that somehow that money will continue, either from the federal government or from some other program. So it makes the structural deficit artificially look like it's not there, because they're just saying, well, we're going to start with this base. So that's not a structural deficit. It's only if you promise things that weren't promised before. Well, that money's not going to be there. It's one-time money. It's creating a huge structural deficit that's kind of unkept because of a kind of a clever accounting trick.
And again, if that was the first time that this has happened, but every budget we've had to go back in less than a year and fix with either a budget repair bill or a budget adjustment. So this idea that these numbers are being put out there as you know, honest numbers, it's the fact is we've had to change them every time. So it's by design.
Is this helpful?
Yep.
Is it okay to do the model too?
Okay.
All right, thank you.